Welcome to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amsoil.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amsoil. As always, it's your friends Shane Stetsny and Brent Smith here. It's been a minute since we talked after Wheatland. How do you think the weekend went, broadly speaking?
I think it went great, right? Big thing was Mother Nature.
Weather cooperated, yes.
Yeah, we always goof around coming in, but we really want great weather, and it turned out to be amazing. Got to go to the dirt track on Saturday night and hang out, but, I mean, the racing was phenomenal. Back at that facility, man, it's just a blessing to get to go there. It's in the middle of no man's land, but it's well worth the trip.
Yeah, and we were just talking before we actually started recording about, especially round two Sunday there in Wheatland. There was like a whole bunch of memorable races on the pro side of things, completely headlined by Johnny Greaves winning career pro four race. What is it, 105 now, with that win in round two? And I even said it, I think right after it happened, that felt like Johnny Greaves of 20 years ago. Like, he hunted down Jimi Henderson, passed him with a good aggressive pass, ran away from him. That was some real vintage stuff from the old man.
Yeah, I loved it. It gave me goosebumps just saying, look at G-Paw, you know, going for the lead because, you know, he deserved it. And, you know, for him to have CJ on the radio, how many times have we ever seen that? You know, it's been a while since CJ's been
right
on the radio for his father. And I think that helped out. But the guy's got it no matter what, right? You go look at him. He's physically in great shape. He's been booted, battled, and pushed around every which way on the track. And
stress tested, you could say.
Yeah, like unbelievable. I mean, especially the track we're coming up to. But I feel he's back. And we need him because he puts on one hell of a show. But with CJ on the radio, and we've heard it time and time again what the kid could do, it just showed. He kept them calm, kept them cool and collected, and that's what it takes, even in an aggressive Pro 4.
I think it was a good reminder, too, and maybe another, you know, for the more casual fans or newer fans to Champ Off-Road, trust me when I tell you, Johnny Greaves has forgotten more about how to win in Pro 4 than most other drivers will ever know. Like I said, it was the Johnny Greaves that we were used to seeing 15, 20 years ago. Every single race, he was that guy. You know, purely speaking as a fan, it was just remarkable. It's tremendous to see that happen again now in 2026.
Yeah, I loved it. It was great. And that's what it's all about. You know, you want to see different winners, and nobody expected G-Paw to come out and lay one down, and that's what he did, and I think he's going to be a big effect for the rest of the year. He's going to be one with the big hammer trying to knock out CJ when he comes back. But Jimi Henderson's fast. They're all fast. We're going to have Mamer back in the field.
Yeah, Mickey Thomas with the new truck looked really fast.
Yeah, he's already excited to be back in that thing, and why wouldn't you? I mean, it's going to be a dogfight, and that's what we love to see with the biggest, baddest trucks.
You know, it's a more top-heavy group of drivers than we've seen, but the talent that's there still. You know, I expect some dogfights on the racetrack throughout this season in Pro 4. And I agree with you, too. I think, you know, the old dog, the salty dog, Johnny Greaves, has more of those runs in him for this year.
Yeah, and, you know, it's going to be a long, long season for John. But if you put him up in the top three in the points and he's got that goal to go after, I mean, he really don't care about another championship, right? He's out to rip. But at the end of the day, he's going to be there in the end if he can just be consistent, right? I mean, him and Henderson going back and forth, pushing each other, that's what we like to see. But nobody punted one another, right? Like, Henderson got into him coming back before the crossover jump, but he gave him space, right? He didn't keep driving through him. So I think it goes a lot both ways. You know, you got to take what you can, but you got to be able to be cautious in the right times on that blue group, because no matter what, you punt somebody, throw them in the wall, their day could be over.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head there. It's really good, respectful, but physical racing, which is,
right,
you know, that's what every fan who comes in or is watching on Flow, that's what they want to see when it comes to, you know, Pro 2s and Pro 4s. Speaking of Pro 2s, you know, we kind of saw what we expected to a degree. Ryan beat really fast, had some issues. Keegan Kincaid had some bad luck as well. You know, the round two race was a little bit of a chaotic one. We had that, you know, the parking lot race. You never know what you'll see at the racetrack. Every day is a new day, and there's always something new that happens. I've never seen an entire field of trucks all at a complete stop. It was just, you see something new every time you show up. One thing that stood out from the Pro 2 side was in round two, the winner was Johnny Holtry, debuted a brand new truck built by Mike Vandenhoevel. You know, we saw the reveal, the teaser videos in the off season when he went out and did some testing out west. We knew it was going to be fast. He proved it early this year, picking up right where he left off in Pro Light, frankly.
Oh, yeah, and he was running all winter, too. So, I mean, seat time's huge in any class, but to get in a Mike Vandenhoevel chassis, you and I both know our whole life what Mikey has been doing. And to be able to go to them and get the great piece and then to have John behind the wheel to get to adapt to it, it didn't take long. The truck worked very well. He looked really comfortable. And, I mean, it's going to be a tough class all year long, but that's where he wanted to be, is on top. And it just gives me great excitement to look at Mike Vandenhoevel, the smile.
Right.
He's so excited that look at my trucks. And he should be, because everything he's built, that damn thing went out and won.
You know, not only did a truck he built win in round two, but his driver, the guy that he's actually working for at the racetrack, Jacob Rosales, the Cuban Killing missile, it. As they call him, had his best ever run in Pro 2, at least in a points race, finished second in that one. So, yeah, I mean, it goes to show you, if you want to go a little bit faster, find a way to work with Mikey.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Jacob Rosales is just doing a phenomenal job. I mean, how comfortable he was to end the season last year and then to bounce out and really put on a clinic. I mean, he was really doing a great job. I mean, just watching him develop. Pro Light, he really didn't like that class, right? I talked to him quite a few times. It was hard for him to keep it on the wheels, but I know for a fact it's not easy to drive those trucks, but he was just destroying things in my own head, which he got in the Pro 2 a little bit more steadier, stable with, you know, he just adapted well. And again, Mikey Vandenhoevel chassis. And when you have him working in and outside of your program, you know good things are going to happen.
Two other classes that I want to single out, at least on the pro side of things, from the opening round in Wheatland. We said before the season started on this very show that Pro Buggy and Pro Spec were going to be knockdown, drag out battles for the points championships all year. And that's exactly what we saw. Pro Buggy over the two rounds had six different podium finishers. Billy Booth, Tony Keepers, Jaden Uribe on Saturday, Cole Burnlord, Jordan Burnlord, Zachary Drapkin, who's running part-time on Sunday. And then in Pro Spec, you had five different drivers on the podium. Only Nick Visser was on the podium both days. So just like we predicted, it's going to be a season where I think both of those classes, we're going to see five, six or more different winners. Maybe we don't see a repeat winner in either of those classes until Crandon or beyond, honestly.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting because the classes have really gotten really competitive over the last 2-3 years. We've been talking about it nonstop, and you see the same names once in a while in certain classes, but you have welcome surprises like Draxton Shimmick, right? Like, that kid is young yet, yeah, and he is ripping.
Yeah, I know I said this during the show the day that he won. I'm almost certain that I made a comment, something to the effect of coming out of the 570s, where he was fast, but, you know, definitely not dominant in a really tough class of kids when he was running in the 570s, to make that jump, it's almost like he shouldn't be this fast this soon.
I agree, but it's crazy to mind boggle all that, right? Like, you explained it with the 570. You're right. Like, he wasn't the fastest, not taking nothing away, but then he gets in a truck and it didn't take him long to be confident behind the wheel. And remember when I was talking to Zach in the pits, I came back and told you before we went on air that he was having some ECU problems. I mean, they went through like 3-4 of them and they never stopped, right? Zach's over there taking his hat off, putting it back on, sweating. I'm like, hey, bud, how's it going? He's like, dude, I don't know. We can't figure it out. He said it's bobbling every time he gets in and out of the corner. And I knew right away in round two when he was after his first, second lap, it didn't look like it was doing anything bad. And right, I knew he was going to have a great day.
Yeah, and I mean, add him to the list of teenagers who have now won a pro spec race.
Wow. You know,
even going as far back as Gray Ledbetter a few years back. Avery Hemmer, obviously Thriller Wyatt Miller, the defending champ. We kind of jokingly talk about the race within the race, the grudge match between the quote-unquote old guys and then the kids. It's scary out there for the people our age, man.
It really is. You know, I mean, I know Chris Vandenelson's listening right now, and we talk about it once in a while. He's not even that old, and it's like he's the older guy in the class. And
yeah, him and Nick and Ronald.
But man, it's going to be a fight in its own. It's going to be fun. You know, they have respect for one another. And I believe, remember when we had the Visser Wyatt Miller incident that got settled way back last season. So nobody's out to chop anyone. I mean, you have some new trucks coming out in Anago, so I feel the bigger the field, the better.
Yeah, and, you know, again, we called it. Looking at those groups of drivers on paper, not tough to say that both of those, both Pro Spec and Pro Buggy would be competitive, but, man, I'm, like, licking my chops to get to the rest of the season for those two classes. And now's a good time to talk about it, I guess. Maybe the biggest headline to come out of Champ Off-Road specifically since Wheatland was a big schedule shakeup for Anigo, changing the order that the pros will run on each race day. So we kind of built from, you know, smaller vehicles up to, you know, Pro 2 and Pro 4 being the finale. That's how it's always been. That's how it's been previous to Champ Off-Road. It's how it's been, you know, since you and I were kids, teenagers. Doing things a little different now. Pro 2 is going to be first on both days. The order in between is a little bit mixed up. Pro Spec is going to be the final race on Saturday. Pro Buggy is going to be the final race on Sunday, which, again, arguably those are the two most competitive classes. So, you know, I think that'll work as a great grand finale. Pro racing on Saturday runs about from 4 to 8 p.m., so kind of the golden hour approaching sunset when we wrap up with Pro Spec, when that's all said and done. And then we kind of crunched the sportsman's schedule a little bit on Sunday, moved some podiums around to try to keep things moving along, and then starting pro racing at lunchtime on Sunday. So what are your thoughts overall on the big shakeup in the schedule?
I hope we get lunch, Shay. That's the first part about it. No.
There's still a scheduled intermission, so.
All right. Well, no, I feel it's good, right? It's going to change things. Options for drivers, tire choices. Setups. I mean, they're not going to see the same track they did last year. I'm excited. Like you said before we got on here, you know, you're open with it and I'm open with it too. Let's see how it goes. What do we have to lose, right? It might create fans to stay longer, shorter, whatever it could, but all of our races are great. So I think it's not going to matter. I think it's going to be all fun for the drivers to get a different track.
Yeah, I think that's the kind of the story behind the story there is that, you know, the Pro 2 is the opener both days, so they're going to have a fully prepped track, which is great for them because Pro 2 typically, by the time they get out on the racetrack, and we even saw it in Wheatland for rounds 1 and 2, not much racetrack left for the Pro 2s, and they're the truck class that kind of needs it the most. If it becomes one line in Pro 2, it's really tough to pass because those are 4,000-pound trucks, and when they're all just searching for the cushion, it can diminish the amount of passing in a race. So they'll get a great racetrack. That's awesome for Pro 2. We might see some of the best Pro 2 racing we've seen in a long time. I wonder about the other side of the coin, though. Pro Spec on Saturday, Pro Buggy on Sunday, they're going to get the table scraps of the racetrack. They're going to get what's left of it. Do you think that's going to change kind of the calculus for a lot of the drivers in those classes? You know, making tire choices or setup choices or even alter their driving styles a little bit, alter their approach a little bit?
I believe that it's going to give guys and gals different options with the tires and the choices. Pro 2, they're going to have a clean slate, I believe, because we're going to be right after intermission. So they're going to be the ones that destroy it, right? But is it fair to the ones that are coming up after Pro 4 in the middle of the day?
Well, somebody gets the scraps regardless.
Right. You know, they got the clean tracks in the past. Now there's different options and opportunities for people to show their driving styles, right? Maybe it'll get really roughed up for Pro Spec and Pro Buggy. You might see somebody else win because they just are a motocross driver or there's someone that just can pick apart a track when it goes to
Well, I'm thinking more of a guy who's, you know, the guys who have been around a little bit longer. Maybe in Pro Spec that favors Nick Visser, Chris Vandenels, and Ronald Cosiza, guys who have run on various levels of destroyed tracks through the sportsman ranks and even to a lesser extent in Pro Spec. And on the Pro Buggy side, I'm thinking Sunday, whatever's left of the track at that point, if anybody can figure it out, it's going to be Mark Steinhardt. Oh, I think it kind of plays into the veterans a little bit.
Yeah, the more tore up the track is, he's going to capitalize on it. And I believe that infield by the end of the weekend is just going to be hard packed on the inside and just a sandbox on the outside. You know, I mean, and that's what's going to be cool about it. You know, like they're going to have to change what they did in previous weekends to make something else work, right? Maybe you're going to see more drivers up watching the races instead of sitting back in the pits. You know, you got to watch the track as the day goes on. I think it'll be interesting. It really will be.
If anything, I think it'll be an equalizer.
Right.
It's going to be a little bit harder to run away from everybody else when you're learning the track at the same time they are.
Yep, absolutely. I really agree on that 100%. And as a driver myself, I would love to see something different. And hey, it didn't take long to open this idea up and to put it in stone. So we'll see what happens, right, Shane? I mean, either way, we got to call the races and it should be fun.
Oh, it's going to be a good time no matter what. One more thing I want to talk about, another pro driver who surprised me, I think, in Wheatland, Cross Kirchmeyer, pro stock side-by-side, clean sweep rounds 1 and 2. Again, we knew that, we talked about him being part of a really tough group of drivers in that class before the season started. Did you have that on your radar, starting the season 2 for 2 for Cross?
I mean, he's been very competitive in the last couple of years. I mean, very, very strong, but to double down in that strong of a class, that's not an easy feat in itself. And he's got the ball rolling. He's excited. He's very talented. He's calm. He's cool. And he can really rip in a car. And, you know, and I keep on saying that word, but at the end of the day, like, you get out front and nobody can touch you, that's where you want to be. And he's got that car dialed with the small family team, which I love.
Yeah, I mean, we try not to root for anybody, but it's easier for us a little bit to root for the underdog or, like you said, the smaller team, the guys and gals without factory support. And for Cross, like you said, small family team, kind of a do-it-yourself operation to show up and plant your flag in that way. You know, I don't know that any of us, including Nolan, would have, I don't think we singled him out as, you know, a championship favorite, but all of a sudden there he is.
Yeah, unbelievable. I'm just excited to see, you know, where it goes to with these divisions, because every class, I mean, we don't even know halfway through at the halfway point, like who's going to win, because anything can happen. But when you get new blood in the water, I love every minute of it.
This was kind of a fun one. I was, you know, cruising through all the Sportsman results as well and kind of jogging my memory a little bit. Sportsman side by side really stood out to me. We knew it was going to be wide open because Code St. Peter and Carson Hill and a bunch of other fast guys kind of graduated up to pro-am side by side. Before the season, when we had Nolan on the podcast, we were throwing out some names who were the next people to fill their shoes. I'm going to give you the names of the top three drivers. It's Chad Amling, who won in round 2, Sam Phillips, who won in round 1, and then Stefano Caligiuri, who was 3rd in round 2. That's your top 3 in points. Do you remember us ever mentioning any of those names before the season started?
No, they're new to me. Yeah, I know. It's crazy. Nothing against them, but holy man.
Hey, we know their names now.
And they're going to be around for a while. I mean, I believe you put your stamp down in the first weekend. A big track, right? Not a lot of seat time there. They're going to be ones to reckon with, and it's great to see new faces.
And I thought this was interesting too, looking at the Pro-Am Turbo class. Between the Sportsman side-by-side class and Pro-Am Turbo, across the 2 rounds of racing, so 4 races combined, out of the 12 podium spots available, 10 different drivers finished on the podium across those 2 classes. Those 10 drivers last year, and some of them are new to Champ Off-Road, but some aren't, some had been around. Those 10 last year combined for 1 podium. So you got a whole bunch of new blood that all of a sudden showed up in a big way, whether it's coming in from another series or just the work they did in the offseason and found that speed. That just kind of blew my mind.
It's crazy because, you know, the confidence that it builds and the talent, the levels that have changed, whatever they did, like you said, the offseason work, the effort they're putting in. I mean, going from 1 all year to 10 in the first weekend is unbelievable.
In a way, that kind of proved me right, that I kind of framed the opening weekend as, you know, opportunity being kind of the overarching theme of everything. And man, so many of those drivers, like Ty Lukemeyer, shows up and sweeps the weekend in Pro-Am Turbo. A guy who had never raced champ before, you know, showed up to the National Series, wins both races. Like I said, you had those 3 in Sportsman side by side, 3 drivers that were not on our radar whatsoever. And I guess that's our bad. again, we'll, you know, we'll own up to that, but all of a sudden there's a new crop of fast guys to cheer for, right?
Yeah, trust me, we won't forget about you guys now, right? We always say, stay on our camera, we can talk about you. So, I mean, they're doing what they need to do to be up front, and trust me, they're going to be ones to reckon with all season long, as there are so many talented racers in these classes, Shane, but at the same time, when people can double down all weekend and take that sweep, that's got to be a great feeling.
Yeah, that was kind of the next point I wanted to bring up. So Champ Off Road, we have 20 classes of racing, and 10 of those 20 classes were swept out in Wheatland. Evan Hockers and Light Buggy, William Holcher in the 570s, Connor Schultz to the surprise of nobody in 1600, Tucker Pakenham filled in 170s and swept the two rounds. Gabbert Guyen swept in the 200s. Lincoln Monsager, the defending Modcart champ, swept that class. Drake Matag came in, filled in for Connor Berry, and swept Pro Light. Jeb Boodle in Pro Side by Side, that's a really tough class to even win one race in. He was the winner in both days. We mentioned Cross Kirchmeyer in Pro Stock. Then you had Colt Wurzba in Stock Truck, and Nick Bing in Super Stock. Again, 10 out of 20 classes. I don't expect that we will see that again this year, but what do you think? Some of those names you could probably point to and say, you know, those guys are going to keep it rolling, but most of those classes I named are, I think, just too tough to keep up win streaks.
Right. I mean, it's hard. Like, it was cool to see William Holcher do what he did in 570s and get that confidence back. I mean, Evan Hockers just flat out flying, you know.
Yeah, I know Light Buggy's not going to, you know, nothing against Evan, who was earned every bit of those two wins, but Light Buggy's not going to come that easy the rest of the year.
No, but will Jeb Boodle just continue to dominate? You can't say that either, right? Because there's so much good talent in the field. Drake Matag, he's going to get another shot at this thing before Connor Berry comes back. Whether is he coming back the middle of the year, end of the year, or at all? I mean, right now Drake's just smiling and grinning ear to ear because he's getting a rip at a Pro Light.
Yeah, I mean, looking at the list, a lot of these classes I could pretty confidently say, like, we'll see other winners at Antigo, right? I think that was just a kind of a weird anomaly, though, that half of the classes were swept. And man, Jimmy Henderson just about made it 11 out of 20.
Yeah, that's, you can't predict that, right? If we would have brought that up before sitting around at the hotel, we'd have been like, yeah, right. I mean, Nick Bing, yeah, when he's on, he's on. I get it,
right.
Jeb Boodle. But I mean, Gabbert Guyen and Lincoln Modsager, they're fast as well, but to see Evan Hocker is doubled down. I liked how you touched on the Light Buggy because, you know, there's so much great talent in there as well. And Evan's probably going to hate us for saying it, but it's going to be a tough challenge, but he's up for it.
Well, with that and kind of putting, you know, the Show Me Off-Road Shootout fully in the rearview mirror, you know, did you have a single favorite moment from it all? Was it that parking lot Pro 2 race in round 2? Was it the Johnny Greaves win in round 2 in Pro 4? I can tell you that I think my pick is probably Wyatt Miller versus Chris Vandenels in round 2. You remember round 1, Wyatt went up on the bike, couldn't save it, rolled, and actually collected Vandenels, and so ended Wyatt's day and then sent Chris way to the back of the field, and he had a tough time gaining any ground from there. And then those two battled it out, last lap pass by Miller for the win, setting up kind of the championship battle we saw all of last year. For me, I think that's probably the memorable moment, although, you know, G-Paw taking that win close second for me, but what say you?
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you on the Thriller Wyatt Miller and Chris Vandenels race. This all weekend, how it was fun to watch Chris try to get comfy in his new truck. Wyatt Miller coming out in his new truck and just ripping around. Never thought I'd see him go upside down, but that's how aggressive you have to be to go for the win. But you got to give it up to G-Paw, right? We thought he was back in the 2000 eras. Like, he was hauling the mail and doing what he needed to do and keeping Jimmy Henderson honest. And I don't think Jimmy would have thought Johnny would last that long and to the end of the race, just being that aggressive, just bringing back the old days. So you got to give it to G Paul. I'm proud of him. Excited to see what he could do at this short little bull ring in Antigo.
Yeah. And I think, you know, broadly speaking, I'm just excited to get to Antigo and see what the next moment is, right? But we got the new schedule. It's going to create some differences in the kind of racetracks they see. I think we're set up to, you know, create more memories when we get there.
Oh, yeah. I'm excited. It's only a week and a half away, and man, it's Antigo. It's going to be fun. Schedule change is huge. I mean, you're going to have a lot of bench racing, and we're just glad to be a part of it, Shade, and it's going to get good.
I think you hit the nail right on the head there. Before we move on and chat with our guest on this episode of the podcast, I'll remind you that this podcast is brought to you by Amsoil. You can use the Amsoil Shop by Vehicle tool at amsoil.com and take all the guesswork out of picking the best oil and filter combination for your vehicle. You can choose the right product and packaging option for your needs and enjoy fast, free delivery right to your door. Visit amsoil.com to learn more. All right, our guest on this episode of the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil from Pro Buggy, it's Michael Meister, the five-time class champion. Michael, we appreciate you finding a little bit of time for us.
Oh, hey, Brent and Shane, thank you very much. I appreciate you guys asking and having me on.
Different about this year compared to your last few seasons, you made the decision at some point in the offseason. You announced it a little bit late towards the start of the year, but you're back to full-time for this year. What was different coming into this season or throughout the offseason maybe that made you decide to come back full-time?
Well, I guess you could say there's a few things, but like say even seeing a red plate on somebody else's buggy, you know, that's just kind of like a, you know, an added motivation to like, all right, maybe we want to try to battle back and do that, try to battle back and, you know, do that thing again. But also, like, say the last couple of years, like, whether I just didn't race or did, like, that partial season, like, last year, and then 2 years before that, it was just such a, you know, we ran the full season, but it was just, you know, issue after issue. So it was just like, all right, like, I want to, I don't necessarily have to prove to anybody, you know, like, that we can still do this, but I want to prove to myself, like, put a program together, you know, have everybody behind me, my family and friends, and try to put a program together and go at it again for this summer. But yeah, there's kind of a variety of reasons, but it's going to be chaotic. And obviously from the beginning weekend, it's, you know, we're going to be coming from the back, but I'm excited to, you know, continue on and have fun and also be competitive.
How much over the past, you know, maybe even throughout last year, I'm curious to know your wife Caitlin's thoughts on it, because she's like Brent and me. She's a racetrack kid, knows very little else in the summer other than being at the racetrack. How much has she been maybe not supporting, just supporting you, but also eager to get back to it full time? Has she played a big part in that too?
Yeah, for sure. Like, yeah, this is, you know, ever since she's been a baby coming with her family. I mean, she's been to pretty much all races, you know, whether it be like the Crandon and Bark Rivers, you know, from when she was a baby. So, you know, she understands it, say being, I guess, married into it or just relationship, like it's like a little more because like, say I'm never home and, you know, there's just so much work and detail to put a program together at this point, to work, you know, to figure this all out. But I mean, at the end of the day, she's incredibly supportive and I'm extremely lucky to have her. I'm able to, say, get the race buggy, figure it out and prepared each weekend. And, you know, she's behind the scenes, you know, taking care of the camper, like all that preparations go. Like, it's a huge team effort. Like, she's taking care of so much that I'm not even worrying about, you know, like, because I got other things on my mind. And yeah. You know, just like a thankless job, you know, it's just constant. But once we're at the track and everything, it's a fun time, you know, just to enjoy things, kind of have that mix between competitiveness. And she's extremely competitive also. I mean, she'll be the first one to say, what the heck was that? Or, you know, like just she'll be my first critique, you know, whatever I see online that's against me, she'll say that 10 times worse. You know what I mean? Like she's the hardest on me, but I appreciate that between her and Brad, it's, they're very good and motivating behind me.
Yeah. You talk about Brad. I mean, he's been a big part of your racing for a while now. I mean, is he another one that is just, he won't let you fail obviously, but at the same time, when you get mentally down and you have a bad weekend, is he one of the first ones to give you a call and be like, hey, let's keep going after this?
Actually, that's a good way of saying that, Brent. It's like, yeah, he's always got my back. I mean, Caitlin and him, you know, if we have an issue, like, yeah, we're going to dig into it together, you know, and there's, we're both motivated to do well. We have the same mindset. I mean, all three of us have the same mindset to do well and have fun and try to do the best possible you know, the best we can. But yeah, I mean, we did it before we got into this off-road together. We were RC friends, and, you know, that relationship's gone into what it is now, you know, like with, say, he's my crew chief and spotter, and I mean, I couldn't do without him and Caitlin. It's really just the three of us. You know, we're all 31 years old. You know, we've gone at it since we've been 21. Now it's this will be like the 10th year of me racing buggies. Wow. And it's wild to think, like, a couple of years I missed it, of course, but yeah, it's been that long already. It sure doesn't seem like it, but
time flies when you're having fun or not having fun, right?
Yeah.
I think what I'm realizing every year I grow older is that the time just goes.
Oh, yeah.
Gets away from you.
That's you make us feel older, buddy.
You know, with basically being a three-person team, you know, does that weigh on you more trying to make that decision to run full-time? Is, like, there extra stress there? Obviously, you have a ton of trust in both Brad and Caitlin that they'll support you completely, but does it make it harder for you?
Oh, for sure. It's I can rely on them and just add to their plate, you know, but say Brad's an hour and a half plus away where he lives, so it's not like it's a short ride to the shop to help me out. So he absolutely takes the time. If he has a day off of work and whatnot, you know, he'll come and we'll designate a afternoon or a day of working on the buggy, especially when it came to this spring. Like, it was kind of last minute as far as putting things together in kind of a hurry, but honestly, say what I do for my work, springtime is when I have more free time, yep. Say. So it's just kind of like, all right, I know, and I'm also a very good procrastinator, so I can just fit a whole mess of things. You're
preaching to the choir, by the way.
Yeah, so I just fit a whole mess of things in that month and a half-ish, and, you know, and in the back of my mind, I'm like, all right, I mean, for the most part, I know it's going to work out, and it did. I mean, everything came together well. It was just fluke things that happened at the first rounds of racing, but yeah, I mean, like, going back to the original question, it was just, we each have our things to worry about, and if I'm like, hey, guys, I need this or that, they're like, yep, no problem. You know, we'll take care of it. And I couldn't do it without them.
Do you mark down your days, like, say, with the wife, like, Caitlin, hey, maybe next Saturday we'll have a date night? Or is she pretty open with, you know, if the car is broke, we got to fix that first? Or you guys kind of balance everything out as you go?
I wouldn't say there's much of a balance, to be honest. And she'd laugh also. It's I think it was like a week and a half ish ago was her birthday. So I actually saw her the entire day. Otherwise, I probably didn't really see her a whole lot, you know, besides saying good morning and good night. You know, it was between work, going into work early, and then if I came home at 10 p.m. majority of those first weeks, or, you know, at the beginning of this spring here, you know, I'd be lucky. It was just, I always put too much on my plate, and that is a fault of my own. There's a lot going on and a lot of other plans going on also, you know, behind the scenes in our day-to-day life. But I don't know, we're just going to keep trying, and there's a lot of, you know, there's me, Caitlin, and Brad, but there's an incredible amount of support behind my program itself. Like, I think it was in February, there was really bad news in our industry that I more or less was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to race at all. You know, like, it was that bad. And then, you know, like, as the days went on, like, I actually talked to some of my competitors, like, hey, would you guys maybe be interested in updating your buggy and me possibly getting out of it? You know, like, it was a serious thing. And, you know, I started talking to, say, my partners and sponsors, and just kind of telling them, like, hey, this is going on. And I even talked to some other people, and miraculously, and I'm very thankful for everybody involved, but we put a program together that is the best that I've ever came, wow, you know, up with. I'm very proud of it. You know, it's, you know, we're starting out with, you know, what you guys see now, but we have two other designs and stuff in the future for the coming races. So I look forward to showcasing and showing everybody, you know, what we have in store. And I'm very proud and thankful of everybody.
It's crazy how life works, right? One minute it's all 100%. The next minute you're wondering if you have work to make your racing program happen. And that's what people don't understand. Even though you're in a pro buggy, it's not like you wake up every day and this is your 9 to 5. You have to go out in the woods nonstop just to create funding to make it happen in your own head.
Right, for sure. And, you know, a lot of that's been a lot put on me in the past. And say this year, I just, with things behind the scenes going on, I couldn't, say, put as much of my own funding into it. So that's where I had to, you know, look elsewhere. And that's where a lot of people have come on board. So I'm beyond thankful. And a lot of the people are, you know, like within day-to-day business, you know, a lot of those brands that support me, but a lot of small businesses, like just around the central Wisconsin, even northern Wisconsin area, like, man, those are the people that have really came and supported me. Like I'm beyond thankful for that. So I'm trying to do my best within social media, like just to showcase as much as possible. And I also want to do things differently than say everybody else. Like, you know, we know of a lot of really good, like the higher end quality racers within Champ here. And, you know, I'm just a buggy racer and just, I'm just a machine operator also. Like I'm nobody special, but, I'm going to try to provide as much, you know, push and showing for all these businesses that support me. So we'll see as time goes on, but you know, we'll give it a try at least.
So you touched on this a little bit. We'll switch over a little bit and talk about the more current challenges, I guess, facing your program, your championship hunt this year. First, I know that you posted a great video explaining everything that went wrong at Wheatland on your Instagram page. I watched it today just to prepare for this, but briefly, you ran into a whole bunch of stuff, most of it completely beyond your control and just some lousy luck, right?
Yeah, unfortunately. Like, everything was fine for practice and qualifying for Wheatland, and then the next time the car got started up, I had a spiked oil pressure reading. So, you know, I had a spare that we had picked up and, you know, threw it in thinking, all right, no problem, you know, just slap a new one in. It started reading fine, and then we started on the front row for Saturday's race, and as soon as I put a load on the engine and we kind of got right at the entrance of turn one, red lights on my dash and completely shut down. Thankfully, though, like thankfully, my Beyond Redline stuff, Motec system, that completely shut my car down and kind of put it into a limp mode. But I ended up, and I knew what it was right away because that's a weak point on our engine is the oil pressure sensors, and oil was blasting through the electrical connector. I ran it into the hot pits and I was like, hey, do I have oil spraying out? And they're like, yup. And I was like, gosh darn it, you know. I knew right away. So thankfully, once we got it back to the pits and everything, I only lost a half a quart of oil. So it wasn't like it just dumped a bunch of oil. So
didn't really hurt much?
No, really nothing. And good. And the Beyond Redline guys pulled my data like they'll do this whole year and just check over things. And, you know, everything was happy that way. Tony Keepers, he actually had a good brand oil pressure sensor that he lent me. So I really appreciate Tony doing that. And that was able to race for Sunday then, having correct oil pressure. And then Sunday went well. I had to start, I think it was 13th. Started out well. It was pretty slick. So within the first, lap or two, guys, I kind of made my way up to fourth or so and was battling.
Yep.
And then as soon as I made one of the passes, I think I got past Zach Drapkin. And that was going to be a cool battle. Zach's a cool guy, and him and his dad are, it's awesome to have them in the class and come out from all the way from Arizona and California. But we're just aware in one of my power steering lines burst. And so I was just fighting air in my power steering system. And then I was managing that. And at halfway, during like that next lap, a big rock got lodged into my front end of my buggy in between my rim, and it knocked out my caliper. It bent my rotor in half, that locked up my spindle and was locking up my tire, and it did a bunch of damage. And the hot pit guys, again, I ran it in by them, and they actually took a pry bar with a hammer and slammed that thing out of there. That was a collective effort between all the pro buggy pit guys. Like Tony Keeper's crew was there, you know, the Lemke's and Hawkers, they do say my tires if I need one, but them guys, and even like Uribe's guys, and even Boost crew, like everybody was involved. And I think they do that probably for a lot of the guys, you know, like sure. They just want to see everybody on the track racing. So that's one thing cool about our class, but they got it knocked out, but just the damage to my rotor and everything, it randomly was locking up against my spindle and caliper mount. So I was able to finish the race, you know, not at pace or anything because I couldn't make any right-hand corners. But yeah, I guess that's kind of how that weekend went, unfortunately. So I have new parts on the front end of my car. I have a different oil pressure sensor, a good with a added pigtail on my engine for my oil pressure. So, and then we had testing last Friday in Anago with Ryan Schwabe and Zach Zakowski. So that was really positive, and I enjoyed that a lot. So we had quite a bit of laps and on Friday, and everything went well. We tried a bunch of stuff. So yeah, I'm looking forward to Anago.
Man, it's a tough fight though, right? Through any kind of racer, any race series or what program you're putting together, it's like you have so many bad days. It's like you have to make sure on those good days you really celebrate it in your own head, because it could be forever before it goes right again.
Oh, for sure. It seems like, I don't know, the last couple of years, there's a lot that's gone bad, unfortunately. So hey, you gotta be extremely happy when, you know, we do have success, and then just that's just motivates you more for when the bad days happen. So I've definitely learned to just, all right, take it as it comes and not get extremely upset, but be present and understand, you know, if it was my fault or not, what happened. So it's been a learning process. You know, when I was a lot younger, I think I've matured quite a bit more. And when I was a lot younger, it was, it would have really frustrated me. And now I just, you got to brush it off and move on, you know, like you guys were saying earlier, it's a long season. So we'll take it as it comes and go from there.
Yeah, I think that's it's really interesting that you just made that point, because I was going to ask about the, you made a post on social media right after Wheatland, or the, you know, within a couple of days afterwards, where you basically said it was a lousy weekend, but you found ways to enjoy it anyways. Is that just something that's kind of grown out of experience in racing? Because like Brent said, it stinks a lot more than it's fun sometimes, right? Or is that just kind of a something as you've grown older and wiser, maybe it's something that you've changed about yourself?
I think a little of both. I've definitely, say, grown within our business and stuff, just the patience thing, and just you know, taking things as they come. Not every day is going to be good, and to not let that overwhelm myself is a very important thing. So, you know, there's more bad days than there are good sometimes, and racing is kind of the same thing at times. So yeah, I mean, hopefully we have good days in the future, but I mean, we'll be ready for anything. I mean, it's a great group of people between the brands and, say, everybody involved in the program. So yeah, we'll be ready for battle regardless.
Well, talking about the near future, Anago coming up next, rounds 3 and 4. I think the hot button issue right now is the change to the pro schedule. As it stands right now, pro spec will be the last one on Saturday, and then you guys, pro buggy, is the grand finale on Sunday.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on the shuffled pro schedule for rounds 3 and 4?
I think it's really interesting. I don't have anything bad to say about it. You know, to try something different, I think is cool. It's, I got to thank Champ overall, and just, you know, like let's try something different. You know, like I do understand the track conditions can be better for some classes that need it. Like say Pro 2, maybe there'll be better racing when the track conditions are just prepped up better. You know, same thing with probably, well, just the two-wheel drive vehicles in general, you know. But like say buggies and stuff, it'll be a challenge because like say in our class, tires are a huge thing. So like say there's a variety of tires that we can run, and that's been kind of an ever-changing thing through the last few years. You know, we've gone from racing like a, well, just like a smaller all-terrain tire, you know, like what a truck would run. And then I do say a wide radial tire that's a little shorter tread, but a lot wider, more rubber contact patch, yep, on the ground at once. And then a lot of guys are running like a winter style tire. So you run at a little higher air pressure with having a really soft tire. And that's a positive thing too. So it's a tire war. And we're still trying to figure out what's best for each track, or if you keep one tire around and base that off of the car. It's, I'm kind of dancing around it like right now, because that's what we're dealing with right now, is like having that decisions, you know. So I'm on the fence on, all right, it depends on the track and maybe the condition, but say right, when we're behind Pro 2 on Saturday for Anago, I have no idea what that track's going to look like. Are sure, they going to prep for us? Are they going to throw water down on a super grooved up track? I don't think we really know. And then say for the final race, will they do a track prep or a little bit of a track prep for the final race? Yes or no? I guess I'm not sure. So it'll be a learning experience. And I don't think we're going to have the same track from Saturday to Sunday either.
Yeah. And you'd think that they would, you'd think on like Saturday that after the Pro 2s that they would prep it just a little bit for you guys, because 750 plus horsepower digging in, you're going to have some treacherous ruts.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, it's going to be grooved on the insides and just blown off, and then a heavy cushion on the outside of the corners. And honestly, it was good conditions or similar conditions I'm anticipating when we had it on Friday for testing, because we had a Pro 2, two Pro buggies, and a Pro Spec also out there. So, you know, that cushion was getting heavier at the end. So I tried a couple different tires at the end to just understand, on a dry and wet track also, just to understand like, all right, maybe this is what we're going to get if we have this condition. So trying to figure out, and the clay on the oval is a lot different than the right, say heavier dirt on the inside of the track. So the clay is a lot more grippy.
Yeah, then you have that sandy, loamy stuff on the inside.
When we were running on the inside, I had zero grip on the inside of the track when it was partially wet. So I think it's going to be hairy, maybe regardless of class, when they do a water. But, I mean, what else do you expect? I mean, we all got a race on it, so it'll be good. I mean, Butch and Zach and all those guys for Langlade Motorplex, I mean, they want to see good racing and provide an awesome facility, and I'm excited about it. I'm always excited for Anago. We've had pretty good results through the years, and I'd say it's my hometown track, just being like 40, 45 minutes away. So I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, Anago, you know, I was looking back over the years, and, you know, you swept there last year as part of a three-race win streak that started in Wheatland. You know, you've already said that you're feeling good coming into the next two rounds. Like you said, the track conditions are going to probably be a little bit of an equalizer. A lot of unfamiliarity with what the track's going to look like, especially coming at, right after Pro 2s on Saturday. Does that put a lot more importance onto like qualifying and the pill draw, especially on a track like Anago that's already pretty tough to pass on?
Oh, absolutely. I think qualifying and the invert that gets pulled from that is absolutely huge for our class. Like, I guess I'd argue that we're probably the toughest class to pass on because we're so wide, but also if you tangle a little bit, something bad is probably going to happen. So I mean, I witnessed that at Wheatland, you know, in a couple scenarios. Like, there's some guys that you can trust out there, and then some guys are going to push the limit and, you know, maybe not be as nice or cautious. So you just kind of know who you're racing against. Like, the majority of the class is awesome. Like, I I'm really good friends with most everybody. And I think it'll be the same thing at Anago. Like, you know, mistakes can happen when the track is, say, like, let's just say if they don't groom after Pro 2, that might be great because it might cause mistakes. And, you know, we're going to make mistakes throughout that because of just, you know, the difficult track conditions. So maybe having it a little rougher instead of just laying down qualifying laps might be a positive thing. So it might be good overall.
It's very interesting though, like that we're talking about this, right? I mean, making changes second weekend of the series in the new year. And I think it's great. Like you said before, right? Nobody knows what's going to happen. You guys are undecided on what tires and what groove you got to do. But I think it'll create some great racing, like you said, though. I mean, you never know what's going to happen, and that's what we love about this sport. And I think the change in the schedule maybe holds some people from watching later in the day, but I think all in all, everybody's got their favorites, and it's just going to bounce back and forth.
I'll counter that, Brent. The two finale races are Pro Spec on Saturday and Pro Buggy on Sunday. I don't think anyone's leaving the grandstands before they see those two.
No, I know we're not.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully not. Yeah.
So I think, Michael, you mentioned this probably before I pressed record, but I was looking back through your racing history, and it like shocked me that it's already been 10 years that you've been racing in Pro Buggy. 10 years of off-road feels like an eternity to me anyways. I was trying to think who even was in Pro Buggy in 2016 that you raced against. I know Steinhardt was there, but beyond that, I don't remember. That's like a black hole in my memory.
Yeah, it wasn't very many. Like, the first couple of years was faint, but it would be Ryan Schwabe, Scott Schwabe, Herman Barnum at times, you know, like for the local, I'll say Bark River, Crandon, you know, sure. Even Tom Schwartzberg, you know, for those same type of races. Joe Eppers also at times, you know.
Was Corey Hanen in there back then?
Yeah, the Michigan guys came every once in a while. Steve Kremen was, yep. I want to say one, maybe it was 2017. He darn near did the full season. So, I mean, it was off and on, but I think there was like a consistent six cars, but, you know, it went up and down. And then, I don't know what it was, 2018, 19. Then, like, 2019 was the Crandon 50th anniversary, and that's sure. Where all the West Coast guys came, and I think that's when things started to really ramp up.
The growth is huge now, though. The growth is awesome. I love it, and Pro Buggy for a long time was just hit and miss, and when you put 13-plus cars on the track in Pro Buggy, it never gets old. There's always action.
Oh, for sure.
Do you think that part of the comeback that the class has made was, because it seems like the most lean years were right before and right after the Ecotex came in. And then, like you said, it was a couple of years after that Crandon's 50th helped boost the class a little bit. And now you've got a ton of new talent, a ton of Midwest homegrown guys like Tony Keepers, who moved up from other buggy classes, Billy Booth, Bo Ambos now joining the class. The Ecotec had to be part of that, but what else is a special sauce in Pro Buggy that makes quality drivers want to show up and race it?
I mean, yeah, with the engine thing, I think it was a positive. I guess when I had gotten into it, that was kind of the transition point. So I never ran anything
right
before that, but like, say, I remember Scott Schwabe's engine, like, say, when we're on the starting line for Crandon, I couldn't hear a darn thing from my spotter if I was next to him. It was
the high, insane. The screaming Toyota.
Oh my goodness. And I think he did it on purpose too, but no, I mean, that thing was a rocket, you know. And then say some of the guys had like the VW Rabbits, like Kremen, that thing hauled at that time too with what he had. And I guess I'm not sure about Honda engines, but I mean, the Honda engines were a thing. But yeah, ever since the Ecotec, I mean, they've been really good. I mean, that one year I ran three seasons on one without even touching the thing. I mean, wow. You can get a solid year out of them. And then, like, say, all the stock components within them, then, you know, you got to switch them out and, you know, swap them to some different ones because, you know, they're more or less stock engines, but they're just getting absolutely beat up. You know, they're revving way higher than they should be. And but say for a pro class in general, say the pro buggy is, you know, a lot more affordable, I'll say. I mean, just from what I've heard from truck people, like, you have to have a heck of a budget for even just fiberglass alone. And I'd say just a fiberglass package can take care of a lot of my, you know, program within a year. So you don't have that added cost in the pro buggy. You know, there's how many people that are coming up, like you were saying, Shane, from, you know, the previous buggy classes. And I don't know, they're so fast. I mean, a lot of the times, I think on some tracks, I mean, we're going just as fast as Pro 2 lap times. So,
right.
I mean, they're a huge power to weight ratio. You know, it's an awesome class. I'd love to try something different, you know, but you can't really beat the class really either, you know, for the cost. I mean, racing's expensive, of course.
High funded dollar, though.
Yeah. There's a lot of people, I think, that would really enjoy the class or want to be in it. And even, like, say, some of the kids growing up, you know, looking up into it. But there's only so many cars, too. Like, that's one thing, I guess, that also hinders the class is, say, these chassis builders aren't building any new ones unless you go and, say, copied one or something.
Right.
So I think that is a little downfall, but I mean, there's still some out there. I mean, shoot, how many times on Facebook Marketplace you can see one pop up, and that one popped up like a week or two ago, and that thing was sold within hours. Wow. So I'm not sure where that one ended up, but when one pops up, that's a good price. You know, people scramble to get it. So
is your biggest, like, part of your funding in the year, is it your motor packages, or do you have it set in stone over the last 5 years where you maintain pretty much the same program?
That's varied. I mean, like, say when I first began, a lot of the program consisted of, like, going to the West Coast for, say, all this program, like, whether it be transmissions, engines, you know, what else. But say, since I kind of got into it, and, like, well, shipping costs have just drastically gone higher and higher too. So it's where, like, say, transmission work, I have Ryan Stingle. The last, I don't know, it's been a few years, he's taken care of my transmissions. And, you know, of course, you got to order from Fortin in California, but order all that.
Were you sending them out to Fortin before, though?
Yep. Yeah, surprisingly. In those beginning couple of years, like when we were trying to figure out gear splits and stuff, I was shipping that stuff between races. And then I also only had one transmission at that time. I was shipping to change gearing.
Wow.
Honestly, some of that was stupid, you know, looking back to it. But at that time, we didn't know any better, you know. I had no idea. I didn't really know too many other people at that time too, you know, like, you just eventually get into finding more localized support. But, like, even, like, engine builders and stuff, like, I had always used an engine builder in California. And then I was fortunate enough to find Bob Burkos the last number of years. And rest in peace for Bob. That was horrible that he passed away not too long ago here. And that's a huge loss for just the racing community in general. But, yeah, it's where the engine program now, like, I'm still able to run a primary of what Bob has running for me, but a friend of mine locally, he's kind of taking over that, and we're figuring out, but it's great to have a spare in the trailer at least that'll, you know, get me through a weekend. And, you know, we're slowly working up about that. But say from my 2023 crash in Bark River, that completely reset all my spares, and now I can say that I have all spares accounted for. Say I have everything back to a full spare list, pretty much.
Took you some time, though.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it, you know, it's one thing to spend money on your actual program, but when you got to spend money on, like, spares, like, that's a whole other story, you know. It's just a added cost that you don't really expect for.
It's like a whole other program, right? Because you have, right, uppers, lowers, everything that you need. Mm-hmm. I mean, right. If you destroy it again, you have it. But at the end of the day, it's not overnight that you can order all that spare stuff.
No. Yeah. Just driveline stuff, the arms front and back. I mean, the list goes on, like you guys know. But yeah, I'm very thankful to have majority of that behind me. At least for right now, right? It's, we have a good package or a good, program behind it. So, I think we're ready for whatever gets thrown at us, whether that be good or bad.
I think one of the things that has really fascinated me about Pro Buggy, especially like the last, really throughout, Champ Off-Road going into year 7, more so now, is that the group of drivers in there, first of all seem like really nice guys. You might disagree having to, lace up and race against them, but every driver in that class that we talk to seems like a really genuine good person. And like you said, everybody, it seems like, wants to help each other out as much as they possibly can. Do you think that lends itself to a little bit better racing too, that, there's so much respect off the racetrack?
Yeah. I can give you a little insight. Like, it's, you're absolutely right. Everybody does have somewhat of a respect for one another. We can race side by side and trust one another for the most part and, have that respect. But, that respect can only go so long when you have, a dozen people that can win one of right. these races. Like, that respect might have to go out the window at some point, or, there's going to have to be, some rubbing or bumping or something, like people are going to be patient for only so long. I guess as I say that, who you can trust fully, and then you also knew, like, all right, maybe this guy's, you only got so long till something else starts happening. So
I won't ask you to name names, but
yeah, tell us a couple. No,
there's someone I'm thinking of who we saw a lot of last year who wasn't at Wheatland that kind of comes to mind.
Yeah. There's been a couple, say, over the years.
Easy, Shane.
But like I said, I respect everybody. I mean, it's great to race against each one. And say, when I didn't race in 2024, like, say there's, say, the newcomers, or like even Jaden last year, like I really didn't get to race with him much when I did race last year. And then, it was maybe a couple times, but nothing like close battles necessarily. So I hope that he can come back, and obviously everybody else. I mean Billy, Jordan, Cole, Ryan, Schwabi, Mark, everybody, Zach Drapkin, Uribe, like all these guys are, it's a good group of guys. Even when I first began, it was, say, the older generation, or just an older group of guys, if you guys know what I mean.
Right.
And say now, I'd say I'm probably one of the older ones. I don't know. There's a lot of young guys in it. So it's just a little change in things. Like, maybe the respect level is a lot quicker turnaround. Like, everybody starts out good, but also, I'd go up to anybody in their pit and chit chat with them. Like, that's the whole thing about this off-road racing, is you can go and at the end of a night and, go chit chat and
yeah,
BS and everything, and enjoy the weekend too. So
you're going to be camping near these people 7-8 times a year, so you may as well get along on some level, right?
Yep, on some level.
Is it weird to you? You mentioned earlier that you're 31. You've already been racing for 10 years. At one point, you were the hotshot young kid in the class, and now that you are one of those veterans, has it been kind of weird to you to take on that role a little bit?
Kinda. Yeah, that's actually kind of funny you bring that up. I have thought that in the last couple of years. It's like, man, I'm like the old cranky guy sometimes. Like, screw it, I'll say. Last year I had some controversy at Fall Cran with somebody, and I, instead of just yelling at them, I, was just a lot more calm, because, say, I had that same situation when I was that, say, younger cocky kid thinking that I was all hot and everything. And say that person, it was Scott Schwabi. He was very calm and collected, and just, you know, understanding of the situation. So I took that same thought process at that time and just,
it's nice to have that respect though, right? It's huge. I mean, you don't want to go side by side with somebody and wonder what corner they're going to take you out in. It's it's a lot more fun to hold your own. And I mean, obviously it's going to get dicey, but if you can be calm, cool, and collected, like you said, makes things a lot more easier.
All right, for sure. Yeah. If somebody's not taking one each other's lines and just, you know, racing corner to corner and showing that respect. I mean, I know who I can do that on the racetrack with, so I look forward to those times.
We like seeing the gloves come off, though. We really do.
Well, I think there is a level where it's a little bit harder for fans to recognize, you know, when you watch trucks, the line that you can get up to before it's you take it too far is a lot farther than buggy racing. And I think that resonates really well with some fans. I really like seeing drivers at the line in pro buggy like that, pushing the edge, but you know, not making corner to corner contact, or the wheels are never touching. It's all, you know, bumper to bumper, and you know, all what we would say is fair play. For the fans who can understand that the line is just in such a different place, it's fascinating to watch a really good battle in pro buggy.
Right.
It's almost more like, this is a terrible comparison, but it's, you know, more of a chess match. You have to outwit the other driver.
It really is. It really is. And plus, you're dealing with those open wheels. I mean, that let alone from a pro two to a pro buggy. I mean, that's just crazy. You guys are nuts. I say it every weekend. You know, how do you not get tangled every time? It's fun to watch, and it's great to see the talent rise throughout the year, right? You're going to have your innuendos through the year, but at the same time, we're going to have a 5-6 car battle nonstop, I believe. I really do. You guys are really putting on great performances, and it's fun. Back in the day for us, it was like, okay, Michael Meiser is going to dominate Crandon, right? Like, you were just so bad fast. But now it's like you have 5, 6, 7 guys, like I just said, that can win at any time. That's interesting to the crowd, to us. I mean, sponsors, everything. It makes it that more entertaining. You don't want to see the same guy win. I mean, I remember those days Shane and I were talking about Scott Taylor, how we just couldn't stand him anymore. And it wasn't that we didn't like him. We just didn't want to see the same guy win all the time.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, when it comes to Crandon, you know, Mark Steinhardt's going to get the whole shot or be right within that. Like, he's got that thing dialed.
Have you heard the conspiracy theory that he's got some longstanding agreement with Faye?
I'm not sure.
I've heard it from a couple people. And, you know, Faye plays it close to the vest better than anybody, so he would never admit it. I've never had a chance to ask Steiny to his face.
No, I haven't. I mean, I think nothing's going to be let up on that, if, you know, to even give you a hint on anything. But he's got that thing figured out, whatever it is, and good for him. Yeah, for sure. It'll be great when he shows back up. I mean, from the last time that I don't want to speak for him, but I believe he's running Antigo and he'll be back to it. So, you know, that's great. So I look forward to it. Oh, for sure. He knows better than anybody how to, you know, protect his line. He's a incredible racer. And I mean, shoot, I learned how much from him, you know, early on. And I mean, we still chat quite a bit, you know, between each other. And is this even a term, but my uncle-in-law, I mean, is that a term? So, I mean, yeah, he's family, or I'm in the family, I guess.
See, you're the young guy to him. See, yeah, you feel like you're the old guy now, but he's got like, what, 28 years on you?
Yeah.
I'm not trying to throw Steiny under the bus, Brent, but everybody is the young guy.
We love you.
Sorry, Steiny.
And he's still kicking a lot of our butts, so shit. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. He loves hearing this.
So, Michael, like, before we cut you loose here, you know, rounds 3 and 4, what does a good weekend at Antigo look like for you after coming back from a tough time in Wheatland?
I think to be able to have a consistent, you know, some consistent podiums would be spectacular. You know, like, you know, we'll begin with practice and qualifying and see how that shakes out and go from there and see where we sit. And like we were talking about before with track conditions, I mean, that's going to be the main thing on maybe deciding what tire to run, even setup in general. I mean, you could throw at one thing or the other, you know, thinking the track's going to go this way or that. So that's going to be very important. And then we also have all these extra points for halfway cautions and the qualifying. So that's going to be huge if I even want to think about, you know, trying to be back and compete. I don't even know how many points I'm back behind, but I'm sure quite a bit. And yeah, I don't know. I got to try to fight my way back somehow, but yeah, we'll see. Consistency, you know, that's, I guess, the main thing is to be consistent and try to be quick also.
Well, like Kyle LeDuc would say, right? If you win every race, the championship will come to you.
Right. Yeah.
So just win it out. Win it out, right?
That's next to impossible, I think. Yeah.
Easier said than done.
Well, Michael, we appreciate it. We look forward to seeing you back out there and what's going to be a very fun couple of races for your class. And thanks for spending some time with us on the podcast.
No, I appreciate it, guys. Thank you for inviting me. And yeah, we'll see you guys in a week and a half. I appreciate it.
Yeah, man. Good luck in Antigo.
All right. Thank you very much.
Well, with that, Brent, why don't we bring this episode of the podcast to a close? We will have one more episode for you before we get to Antigo for rounds 3 and 4. That'll have Cross Kirchmeyer as our guest, so look forward to that one. And in the meantime, we wish all of you a very happy and safe Memorial Day weekend. Enjoy your 3-day weekend.
Yeah, Shane, I'm excited to get to Antigo, and it's going to be a blast. Rounds 3 and 4, here we come.
Coming up at you quick. You don't want to miss it. I'm Shane Stetsony. He is Brent Smith, and this has been the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by AMSOIL. We will talk to you again very soon.
Thanks for listening to the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by AMSOIL.
But that'll do it for this one. I'm Shane Stetsony. He is Brent Smith, and this has been the AMSOIL, what's it called?
Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by AMSOIL.